Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Victoria, British Columbia, earned a BS in education from Tulane University, and while there played football for 4 years. Drafted by the Detroit Lions in 1980, he played 19 seasons in the NFL as a kicker. On January 30th, 1994, he kicked 3 field goals in Super Bowl 28, earning a Super Bowl ring as a member of the Dallas Cowboys. Today, he's the Director of Community Relations for Hope Network. His name? Eddie Murray. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the iconic Eddie Murray, the kicker of the Lions in the 80s. Played in the NFL for 19 years. Eddie, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood?
Sure.
And your mom and your dad, please.
Well, I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which is the East Coast naval base for Canada. My father was a career naval officer. And my brother and sister were born in Victoria, British Columbia, which is the West Coast naval base for the Canadian Navy. So after 25 years in the Canadian Navy, my father was English, so he was in World War II and the Korean War, and Canada was still part of the Commonwealth of England. He moved the family back to England. So in 1960 through 1970, I lived in England. Unfortunately, my father passed away when I was 14 from cancer. And my mother, being a Canadian, she was born in St. John's, Newfoundland. She moved me back to Canada, where we lived in Victoria, British Columbia. We flew from Heathrow to Toronto on my birthday, August 29th in 1970. So moved back to Canada, and most of my Canadian years, that's why I call Victoria my home, even though I was born in Halifax.
You went to Spectrum High School in Victoria.
Correct.
You played soccer, track, cricket, and rugby.
They didn't have cricket there. I played cricket when I lived in England. I played a lot of cricket. It was a very very interesting game to play. But I grew up mostly playing soccer and rugby. And when I went to Canada, I took on playing football, but I enjoyed playing a lot of different sports. I was big into racket sports, so I was on the badminton team. I was track and field, like you had said. I played field hockey. I was kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none type of thing, but I was always the kid that had a strong leg, so I just kind of always gravitated towards ball games.
After high school, Eddie, you spent a year working as a forklift operator in a lumberyard.
Correct.
How did you ever get to Tulane University to become a kicker and a student at Tulane?
Well, you know, that it's the biggest break of my life. I mean, you got to realize this is, I graduated high school in 75 from Spectrum, and a friend of mine who I went to school with, Danny Van Gilswick, his father owned a lumberyard called Lumberworld, and I was from a family that did not have very much money, couldn't have the wherewithal to go to college, so I went into the workforce, and they had leagues at that time that I could play football up till I was like 21. They were all sponsored leagues. We had football in high school, but it wasn't through the schools. They were like a sponsored, because there wasn't enough funding in schools for football. But they had, you know, like we had a construction company sponsor our football league. And so, you know, there was 4 teams. We played Canadian football, and it wasn't really high on my radar. So I just thought, okay, my life is just, you know, going into the workforce. Trying to you know, make a good life for myself. And the coach for the team I played for in Victoria said, "Hey Ed, the BC Lions are going to be having a development camp here on the island." I think you should go to it, because if you do well, you may get invited to go to their main development camp in Vancouver, and you could possibly maybe get a chance of, you know, getting a scholarship. Attended the local camp in Victoria. Did well enough to get an invitation to go to Vancouver. The Vancouver one was a week-long camp, two-a-day practices. The head coach of the BC Lions at the time was a guy named Cal Murphy. And Cal came up to me and he says, "Hey, are you the kid that I heard that can kick?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." He said, "Okay, well let's find a snapper and a holder, and do you mind kicking for me?" So I said, "Sure, let's go do it." As I was moving back, the rest of the guys at the camp started kind of like horseshoeing around me, right? And they were giving me the business. They were yelling and screaming and trying to distract me and all of this stuff. So I went all the way back to 55 yards before I missed. And then I went 2 out of 3 from 55. And Coach Murphy says, "Hey, great, good job, thank you, appreciate it." And everybody was hooting and hollering about how well I did. And so then finished the scrimmage. I'm getting showered, thinking, okay, I'm going back to my life. I'm going back to Victoria. The other thing that was going on at the time for me that was heavy on me was my mother was sick with cancer and was dying at the time of cancer. So, you know, I just wanted to get back home. My mom was kind of going in and out of hospital a lot at that time. So this one Saturday, phone rings, and gentleman says, "Hey, is this Ed Murray?" And I said, "Yep." He said, "I'm Willard Wells from Tulane University." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "Well, I'm interested to see if you would like to come on a recruiting trip." And I said, "No, I'm not interested." He said, "Really? You don't want to hear anything more?" And I go, "First of all, I don't know who you are. I've never heard of Tulane University. There's no computers. It's not like I can Google it at this time, right?" So I said, "Look, I'm really not interested. You know, I have an opportunity to go to the BC Lions." And he said, "Okay, well, if things change, you know, here's my number." I didn't write his number down because I had no interest in really going to school. Coach Wells was an assistant coach with Cal Murphy. Cal Murphy was the head coach of San Jose State. And Cal is looking at the film of me at halftime kicking field goals. And he said, "Who is this guy?" And he goes, "It's a junior we're thinking about bringing to training camp." And he said, "Hey, Tulane needs a kicker." Because everybody goes, "Well, how did you get from Victoria, British Columbia to New Orleans, Louisiana in 1976? And it was the biggest break of my life, with him just happenstance to walk into the office.
We're talking to Eddie Murray. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was he got with the Detroit Lions. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Crisula, and we're with Eddie Murray. Eddie, you got drafted by the Lions 1980 in the 7th round. What did you make the first year?
My first year contract was $30,000. So it was more money than I ever thought anyone could make at that time.
And in your rookie year, you won the NFC scoring title with 116 points. You were named to the Pro Bowl your rookie year. You made 5 field goals. You became the first rookie ever to receive the MVP of that award. I mean, you started out like a lightning bolt.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, that team, unfortunately, that was also the another one bites the dust year. If you remember that, when David Hill and James Hunter and Spider-Man Allen, they took the Queen song, Another One Bites the Dust, and they made their own thing for us. And it kind of got thrown back in our face because we ended up losing the last game to Tampa Bay in Detroit at the end of the season to not make the playoffs. But that was also Billy Sims's rookie year. I came in with Billy Sims, and you know, he was such an exciting player and really put a big boost into the offense that Detroit needed. All I did was just kind of hang on to the coattails because we had a lot of scoring opportunities with Billy.
You played with the Lions from 80 to 91. Near the end of those 12 years, You played with Barry Sanders.
Yes.
Tell us about Barry Sanders.
I had three seasons with Barry, and again, Barry was, you know, that lightning bolt in a bottle that, you know, we anticipated he was going to be, but he gave back tenfold. He was such an exciting player, did a lot of things for the Lions. I mean, you know, Barry, in the early part of his career, was returning kickoffs. And sometimes we would put him back there for returning punts because that's what he did in college. He was a great return guy also. Yeah, he was just magical to watch. You know, sometimes he would make cuts in practice and all the team would just go quiet all of a sudden, like, what the heck was all that about, you know? And a very humble guy, as we all know, and a very religious and very exciting.
Eddie, what do all great kickers have in common, and how do they learn to handle the pressure?
Well, everybody has a different way of handling it. I mean, you have to have really thick skin because you have to realize that you're going to miss. You don't want to miss. You know, when I cross that white line going out to kick a field goal, my intent is not to miss. But you have to be able to handle the miss and then focus on the next kick. My thing was always to make the next kick. You know, one of the things I was very proud of was the fact that I never really got into a rut. Did I have some years that maybe I missed more field goals than I had in the past? I did. But very rarely would I miss back-to-back field goals. So I would always try to get back on track very quickly and try to, you know, solidify the confidence in me, in the players as well as the coaches, that I would be there for them in the next kick.
Everybody focuses on the kicker. But for every kick, there is somebody that snapped the ball and a holder. Talk about the snappers and the holders, who we never talk about.
Well, I mean, at this level, they are excellent at what they do. And, you know, they're doing the best that they can also, because you got to realize I'm standing on the sideline, okay? I'm not in the heat of the battle. Most of the players that snap and hold, maybe not so much now, but back at the time, they were also playing. You know, they would play offensive line, and then they would, you know, they would flip over to be the snapper. So they have to compose themselves after a play. Early in my career, Eric Hipple was my holder. So Eric is the quarterback, you know, especially after when he became a starter. You know, there were times he's down there and he's upset he missed the pass or they didn't get a first down, and he had maybe gotten hit. So he's trying to recuperate from being hit, and he has to, you know, now concentrate on doing a good job and giving me a good hold. So things became a little more specialized as I got further and further into my career, where, you know, punters would end up being my holders, so they were similar to me. They're coming off the sideline. Snappers became more specialized. There were more people like Don Muehlbeck now. You know, Don doesn't play any backup position. He just snaps. So consequently, the level has gotten much better. But back in the early days, it wasn't so much.
1993, you're with the Cowboys.
Yep.
Speaking of quarterbacks, the quarterback that year was Troy Aikman.
Yes. Well, Troy was, you know, someone that he was a perfectionist. I mean, he was, and a lot of it stemmed from Jimmy Johnson, though. I mean, he came in with Jimmy. Jimmy was a very matter-of-fact type of coach, and his big rule was, hey, when it comes time to practice, practice hard, and if we do a good job, we'll be off the field quick. If you don't do a good job, we're going to be out here until we get it right. And if we're really out here a long time, heads are going to roll. He's going to change positions. And so the intensity of practice was very high, but the length of practice was not very long with the Cowboys. They went out, had a purpose, worked on the things that they were wanting to get down for the opponent that week. And when it came time to have fun, Jimmy was always the first person in line to have some fun with the guys and the coaches. And so that really brought the best out of Troy. Troy liked that type of working environment, and consequently, he won three Super Bowls and ended up being in the MVP, being in the Hall of Fame.
And then he calls the game of the week for us.
Yes, he does now. Yeah.
Speaking of getting it right, Emmitt Smith.
Mm-hmm. Well, Emmitt, again, was one of those rare backs. You know, I get the question a lot because of the fact of playing with Barry. And I had many sit-downs, even with Emmitt, when I was playing for the Cowboys. Hey, what was Barry like? What was this? And Emmitt, to this day, I bet if you ask him, I remembered him doing an interview. He said, if Barry Sanders had my offensive line, he would run for 2,000 yards a year. So Emmitt knew, you know, how special of a team that he had in front of him. And I really respected the fact that Emmitt, to me, was a very complete back. Not only, of course, was he a phenomenal runner, he was excellent catching passes out of the backfield, but he also was a tenacious blocker. And those three attributes for a running back are usually very rare. If you can get two of those things, which means, you know, they want him to run good, which is number one, and also if he can be used in the play-action pass stuff and be dumped off, that's great. But Emmitt loved to block. And I know Norv Turner, who was the offensive coordinator at the time, that helped the passing game. It helped the play action pass. If you can keep Emmitt in there and trust him to block for you, that opens up the passing game tremendously.
We're talking Eddie Murray. When we come back, we'll go back 23 years, January 30th, 1994. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Eddie Murray. Eddie, you're with the Cowboys in 93. And on January 30th, 1994, you get a Super Bowl ring. Tell us about that night.
Well, it was a year that the NFL chose to play the Super Bowl the following week after the championship game. So not like it is now where they have 2 weeks and it gets drawn out. You know, we played San Francisco in the NFC championship game in Dallas, and Monday, the next day, we're on a plane flying to Atlanta getting ready for the Super Bowl the following Sunday. So for myself, never, of course, being in that situation, I played in an NFC championship game with Detroit when we lost to Washington and not going on to the Super Bowl. So for me, it was just like a regular week, except we're in a different town. So practice schedule is the same. You know, what we got all of the ticket stuff out Monday morning, and we had a team meeting, and we had to be ready, packed, to be back to jump on a plane like at 5 o'clock and fly into Atlanta. And then we went right into like a regular week's schedule. So once we were there in Atlanta and going through practicing and all of that kind of stuff, everything was the same. And I remembered we had a team meeting on Saturday, and Jimmy Johnson made me one of the captains for the Super Bowl, which I was very honored that he did that. Jimmy was big into veterans, whether you were, and you didn't need to have a lengthy career for the Cowboys. He respected the fact that you had a long career. And for me, I was the oldest guy on the team by like 4 years. My kicking coach, Steve Hoffman, I was older than him. Okay, so that was a little unusual. But I took great pride in the fact that Jimmy gave me that honor to be a captain in the game. But I remembered things changed very quickly the day of the game, because that was different. Getting on the bus and going to the game, was everything was all the same. But as soon as, like, my schedule was, I always used to like to be one of the first guys out of stadium. So we would have pregame meal. I would actually wouldn't wait for the bus. I would jump in the cab, or jump in my car if it was a home game, jump in the cab with the trainers, because that's what they would do right after pregame meal. They'd jump in a cab and go right to the stadium and getting ready to tape guys when they came off the bus. So I would go in with the trainers to an away game. So that's what I did. I jumped on the on a cab with the trainers, went to the stadium, and that's my way of just kind of getting away, relaxing, all of that kind of stuff. And I would go out and like walk the stadium just to kind of get out of the locker room. Well, I did that, walking out of the stadium. There was all of the hustle and bustle getting ready for the national anthem and the halftime. People, entertainers, dancers, all of this kind of stuff. And the hype of the game, it hit me. I'm going, oh my God, I'm playing in the Super Bowl. It finally hit me at that time. And I go out onto the field to try to calm myself down. And the stadium's like half full. And I'm not used to that because a lot of people show up late for games because they're at tailgates and all of this kind of stuff, where the Super Bowl, people don't, they go there for the, it's an event. They're in there early. And people on the sidelines, there was a lot of, you know, celebrity people that were on the sidelines. And I was very nervous for me. I was very nervous. I did not have a very good warm-up. And the best thing that happened to me in the game is we won the toss and we chose to take the ball. They didn't have deferment back then. So Kevin Williams, the return guy, had a great return. I think he got to, like their 45. And we had a very short series, but got me in field goal position to kick, I think it was like a 43-yarder, something like that, very quickly. Like within the first 2 minutes of the game, we had gotten great field position, bogged down really quickly, not a three and out, but like four or five plays. I kicked a field goal, and then from then on, it became just another game because I'd gotten into the game really quickly, made the field goal, and I just kind of fell into place and had a great game, was 3-for-3 in field goals and 3-for-3 in extra points.
And you were a world champion.
Yes. Yes, we were. Yep.
That was in your 14th year.
It was.
You actually played 19 years. Talk to us about the adjustment when a player's career finally is over.
Well, my adjustment, I felt, wasn't as bad because I was a rarity back in my career, because after my rookie year, having the success that we had touched upon earlier, you know, I could have moved back to Victoria and, you know, just enjoyed the off season or so. And I chose to stay in Detroit. So after attending the Pro Bowl, taking, you know, another week over there to enjoy the season, I flew back to Detroit and I took a job. And I took a job every year I played football. 20 years, I always took a job. A lot of repping, working for companies, sort of sold nuts and bolts and screws. I was into promotional products. I was doing, you know, banking stuff. I was a franchise director for a candy store operation, Mr. Bulky Candy Stores, which I worked full-time all the time. That was interesting, too. But I always took a job. So for me, when I finally decided to hang it up, when I played for the Redskins in 2000, my wife Cindy turned to me and says, well, what are you going to do? And I'm going, I'm going to go get a job. So I did. And I took positions from then on.
And in 2009, you got involved with Hope Network.
I did, yes.
Tell us about Hope Network.
I was introduced to Hope Network through a very close friend of mine, Mark Levesque, from New Baltimore. He was involved with them through a friend of his who owned a pharmacy, and Smitty, who owned the pharmacy, Hussein Smitty, wanted to supply medications to Hope Network patients that lived in homes in the surrounding Tri-County area here. And Mark wanted to put on a golf outing, Smitty wanted to put on a golf outing at Fieldstone for Hope Network. And Mark says, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you grab me a couple of autograph items from the team? And, you know, can you sign a ball for me so we can give away some auction items? And He said, you're more than welcome to come and play. And I'm a huge golfer. I love doing a lot of charity outings if get asked. And so I did. So I attended the golf outing. Phil Weaver, who is the CEO of Hope Network out of Grand Rapids, was in attendance. He thanked me for my support. Following year, same thing happened. Golf tournament come around, got some autograph items, played in the event. Had a conversation with Mr. Weaver afterwards, and he said, Ed, I'd like to invite you to be on our foundation board for Hope Network. And I asked what that entailed, and basically it meant, you know, just giving us some support and some financial support on a yearly basis, and just trying to spread the word in the Tri-County area for Hope Network, because they're predominantly based out of Grand Rapids. They see about 30,000 patients up in that area. They have a lot of homes where they'll have 4 to 6 individuals in and around the Tri-County area, as well as in Flint and Saginaw and Jackson, Kalamazoo. And we have maybe about 200, 250 homes in the state of Michigan that Hope oversees. So I did. And I became on their foundation board, helped them with events, helped them put together a golf tournament under my name here at Oakland University. And as of Halloween, this past Halloween, they brought me on full time. I had been let go from a company that I was working for, and Mr. Weaver came up to me and he says, hey, Ed, we would like for you to be a member of Hope Network full time. Would you like to take a position with us? So that's where I became the director of community relations for them.
We're talking Eddie Murray. If you want to learn more about Hope Network, www.hopenetwork.org. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Eddie Murray, who had a 19-year career in the NFL. He hit 521 out of 527 extra points. That's 99-plus percent. He tried 466 field goals. He made 352. That's 76%. That's tall cotton. Tall cotton. Okay, now you're full-time with Hope Network.
Yes.
Eddie, what have the people that Hope Network serves taught Eddie Murray?
Well, perseverance really is the biggest thing. That they may have been dealt some adversity, whether it may have been from birth, whether they've had a mental challenge, or from a closed head injury, and the drive and the perseverance that they have to have independence, because that's really the goal for Hope Network, is to give these individuals a sense of independence. Not all of them achieve it. That's why some of them have full-time care, and they're in some of our facilities up in the Grand Rapids area, and trying to build more and more of those types of services down here in the Tri-County area. Or it is the homes that I had mentioned, where we have 4 to 6 individuals that are in there. They all have their own circumstance. They may be there early in their independence, or they may have had long time there, and they've gotten very familiar with their independence, and they feel much better about themselves. So they could be still getting services as far as any type of neural rehab, or they could be taking on a part-time job. And it could be a combination of the two, where they're still getting services. There's still a medical person on staff for any dispensing of medications and any other medical needs that they may need on a 24-hour basis. There's always a medical staff person in the homes. But apart from that, they have their own room. They have to take care of their own room. They make their bed. They have to keep it clean. They have a kitchen area where they cook for themselves. There's no one there doing anything for them. They have a living room area with TV. Sometimes they'll have Xbox or stuff like that with them. They have books for them to read. So they have some interaction between the other people that are living in the home. And the satisfaction that they get out of these homes that we have spread around Michigan, it's amazing. It's amazing. It could, to us, seem menial, but to them, where they came from and where they are has been a huge hurdle for them. So I'm very honored and proud of being a part of the great services, because that's really the difference that Hope has made for the people up in the Grand Rapids area, as well as the homes that we have around here, that they really have done an excellent job on the services and getting people back on their feet with the independence that they desire.
If you want to learn more, www.hopenetwork.org. Eddie, people that have known you your whole life say giving back has been a way of life for you.
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, I go back to my parents. My father being military, my father being British. He was extremely proper. Anytime my father went out with my mother, he always wore a suit and tie. There was no put on a T-shirt and a baggy pair of jeans to go down and to a restaurant. My father always wanted to look nice for my mother, as well as my mother always wanted to look nice for my father. I grew up very military. You know, my father was not dad. He was sir. So that's how I was raised. But giving back and helping people came from my parents. It really did. And it resonated with me at a very young age that even though as I mentioned, I came from a family that didn't have a lot of wealth. To me, I had everything I ever needed. So I didn't know I needed more. To me, I had everything. I had my parents' love. I had my brother and sister's love. I had a roof over my head. I always had a hot meal. And for me, I thought I lived very well. But then looking back on it, there were some challenges. But I didn't know they were challenges because of how hard my father worked and how hard my mother worked to give us love. And we were Catholics, so we're church all the time. You know, faith was very important to us also. And I didn't know any better. That was the way I lived my life, and that's where I try to live my life now with my wife Cindy and daughter Nicole.
Through the years, as I've been blessed to be part of this show, whenever I've had a guest that has either had or has a special needs child or has been working with such people, they always refer to those people as their angel, their hero, their gift from God, the teacher, their inspiration. Eddie, why is that?
I think a lot of the values that we were brought up from the eras of the 50s and the 60s was kind of the hippie era, and all of those errors that we have gone through. I'm a little hesitant at some of the errors that the younger kids are going through now. The stimulus that is out there, the social media that's out there, the hatred that is out there, because, you know, you can send out some very mean things on Facebook, tweets, you know, Snapchat, all of these things that they have out there. And it's like kids don't think there's a consequence to it. You know, I preached to my daughter. I said, be very careful when you push send. Make sure that your mother and I would approve of what you're doing. It's a simple message, but it's a message that a lot of kids don't pay attention to. And it's alarming sometimes to see some of the things that are going on out there.
Speaking of hope.
Yes.
The Lions going forward, Eddie Murray.
I'm very optimistic about what Mrs. Ford has done. God rest Mr. Ford. I think Mrs. Ford has done a really good job with the changes that she has made, bringing in Mr. Quinn and Mr. Wood, and the staff that both they have put together, Mr. Quinn on the football side, and then Mr. Wood also on the business side of the Lions. I'm extremely optimistic that the Lions can be a consistent force. That's the thing that the Lions have not had, is consistency. And I am extremely excited about the future for the Lions under their tutelage.
Atlanta, New England.
Yes.
Super Bowl 51. Who's going to win?
Well, I think the immediate one is going to be the Patriots, because of the fact it's their seventh. It's the Falcons' second, I believe. The thing, now you move the needle back over to Atlanta, their new coach, Dan Quinn, was the defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks when they played back-to-back Super Bowls against New England. They beat them once and lost on the last play of the game with the interception by Butler on the goal line. So he has some kind of a formula against the New England Patriots, but they're different teams now. There's different personnel. It doesn't mean that he can't duplicate that again. I think it will be a close game. But it's very difficult at this point in time. I think I heard there, New England's a 3-point favorite, which basically means it's a push. So I think it's going to be an exciting Super Bowl. That's all the league wants, and I think that's what the fans want. But if I was to be asked today, I would sway a little bit more towards the Patriots.
As our time winds down, what advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
Well, again, going back on values and stuff like that, there's a song that Tim McGraw has out, Humble and Kind, right now. And that should be what every person needs to, as well as child out there. I know there's a line in his song. He said, you know, once you climb that mountain, you need to turn around and help someone else behind you. And if you just live your life humble and kind, say please and thank you, open a door for people, just taking that attitude towards your life, when you go to make that do I fork in the road decision, try to take the humble and kind way of things and being kind to people. I think that's the best advice I can give to anyone, and especially someone young.
Eddie Murray, you live that song every day. You are humble and you are kind. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack, for having me.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasulov. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoh.